A discussion of money and corruption on this opening day for the Winter Olympics. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. The facilities for the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, cost an estimated $50 billion to build. Some experts at the Carnegie Moscow Center, a public policy research group, are among those claiming that process was riddled with corruption. With the Sochi opening ceremony due to start in about 4 hours, Steve Rosenberg, one of the BBC's senior correspondents in Russia, joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning to you.
Preparations for the Olympics, of course, means a lot of construction. Steve, your reporting suggests that a lot of money changed hands in what I guess you would call dodgy, we would call sketchy ways.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of allegations, and there's been a lot of construction, because not only have they been building all these sparkling new sporting venues, but also lots of new infrastructure for a town, Sochi, which really hasn't had money invested into it for decades. And as a result, there have been allegations that a lot of money has been siphoned off, kickbacks. Now, what the Russian Olympic Committee says is that this is simply a case of facilities costing more in the end than they were expected to, and that there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, I suppose the local community, the Sochi area, will end up with some useful infrastructure, given all this money that's been spent when the games are all said and done.
Yes, and that is something that the Russian authorities argue. So now Sochi does have these sparkling new roads. I think 20 new roads have been built. It has a new railway network that goes up into the mountains, which will serve this city well if it is to become Russia's premier resort, and that is what the Russian authorities want it to be. When you speak to people in Sochi, speak to the residents about what life's been like for them for the last few years, they are full of complaints. They say there have been power cuts, traffic jams. But I think the authorities are hoping that once the Olympics are over, the people of Sochi will kind of think, well, yeah, it has been worth it because we have all these wonderful new facilities.
And when you talk to everyday Russians, are they outraged by the swirling allegations of corruption?
Strangely, no. I mean, I went to a town a few days ago just outside of Moscow and was asking people this very question. And most people said to me, look, we know that these games have cost a lot of money. Of course there's corruption in Russia. It's not a surprise to us. It's not news. And I don't think it's going to stop people sitting down and watching these Winter Olympics. There is a sense of pride here. Russia is hosting another Olympics, 34 years after it last hosted an Olympics. And people are not too bothered by reports of corruption.
Steve Rosenberg covers Russia for the BBC. Steve, thank you.
You're welcome.
Apple is employing the circular logic of the stock buyback to prop up its own share price. The company plans to spend $14 billion on Apple stock. The law of supply and demand suggests this should make the price higher than it might otherwise have been at a time when some investors are worried about chances for any new blockbuster product. Apple stock is up 2.3% in pre-market trading this morning. Now let's do some other numbers. We have the FT 100 index up a scant single point. The Hang Seng index in Hong Kong rose 1% overnight. Ahead of the January employment numbers in the U.S., Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up. The official report on unemployment and employment in America is due in just over an hour and a half. Now, if this comes in light, fewer than 170,000 extra names on payrolls, the experts will blame the weather. Meanwhile, the number of jobless Americans who've lost their extended unemployment benefits has swelled to 1.7 million. Reporter Ilya Maritz from station WNYC says long-term unemployed people are confronting what happens when a safety net of last resort disappears.
$579. That was the size of Janet Zipper's weekly lifeline. But at the end of December, Congress took no action to renew emergency jobless benefits. The unemployment checks stopped coming, and Zipper started letting friends and family pay for her trips to the supermarket.
At first, I felt embarrassed, and then I thought, well, you know, I need help.
Zipper is 49 and lives in suburban New Jersey. She isn't a victim of downsizing, but the bank where she used to work as a systems administrator switched its computer operating system. Out of a job, Zipper learned the OS she knows so well is becoming obsolete.
Those skills that I had before that were very popular, paid well, are no longer in such demand.
Since the new year, Zipper has applied for food stamps and gotten a foreclosure notice. Olga Calhoun is also fighting to stay in her home, a rental in Queens. She's been without work since last spring. When I caught her on the phone, Calhoun had just applied in person for a job as a bank teller.
I gave them the resume. They said that they would call if they have an opening.
But she's not hopeful. Calhoun is 64 and thinks companies don't want to hire older workers. To make ends meet, she reluctantly started drawing Social Security early. Calhoun also kept busy emailing members of Congress. She can't understand why anyone would block extended jobless benefits.
Don't they have the same problem in their state? What about the people in their state that voted them in?
So far, there's not much momentum in Congress. Things are looking a little better for Janet Zipper. After signing up for classes in another operating system, she found out she was eligible for a state program that supports workers who are learning new job skills. Now she's getting a weekly check, the equivalent of her old unemployment benefit, for 6 more months. In New York, I'm Ilya Meritz for Marketplace.
And a store has popped up out of nowhere in New York City that lets you take merchandise for free. It's a temporary Marc Jacobs perfume store as part of New York Fashion Week. There you go. Knock yourself out. Free. But what do we all know about the concept of free? The catch is the whole thing is a social media buzz generation device. If you want the Daisy cologne or the handbag for free, you're required to tweet, Instagram, or Facebook about it. They're calling customer tweets with the designated hashtag social currency. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.